One of the weirdest side notes in pop music history was an act called Frank Sidebottom O'Blimey Big Band. It was a British group led by Chris Seavey, a man who was only ever seen on stage in a giant papier-mâché head, kind of like a human cartoon hybrid. Writer John Ronson played keyboards with the group for about 3 years in his 20s, and he tells this story about how he answered the phone one day. Some guy says, "Hey, Frank Sidebottom's keyboard player is just canceled, and they need someone to play tonight." John says, "Well, I play keyboards." And the guy says, "Then you're in." John says, "But I don't know any of your songs." And there's a pause, and then the guy gets back on the phone, and he says, "Well, can you play C, F, and G?" John tells what happens next in a book, a new movie, and here with Doug Gordon.
It was like a dark room, and I knew that he wore a big fake head. And so I saw these men staring at me, and I wondered, you know, if I looked closely, would I be able to see which one was Frank? Would there be some kind of facial indication that this is the man who always wears the fake head?
Yeah.
And they were like fiddling with equipment at the front near the stage. And then I looked to my right and I noticed this other figure in the shadows staring at me with these huge eyes painted onto a giant fake head. He was wearing the fake head, even though there was nobody in the room except for his own band, who surely had seen him without the head on. So immediately I started to think, what, does he never take it off?
Yeah.
Is he, like, possessed? So I knew his real name was Chris. So I said, "Hi, Chris, I'm John." And just silence. So I said, "Hello, Frank." And he went, "Hello!" And then his manager came over and said, "Can you teach John the songs?" So he turned away from me as if kind of shyly undressing and removed the head and removed some weird metally contraption that was underneath the head and then turned and gave me this sort of apologetic smile as if to say, you know, "I'm sorry that you had to witness such oddness, but that's just the way things are in my world." And he taught me the songs and he was just normal looking underneath, just a nice, normal looking man.
Mm-hmm.
And then the audience arrived and I was on stage with a band.
Thank you.
And it was extraordinary. There was 300 people in the audience and they just loved it, and I loved it, and I felt like Alice chasing the white rabbit down the hole.
Did Frank introduce the band members?
Yeah, so it was a kind of odd moment because Frank said, "You know, I'd like to introduce the band." "Drums, Mr.
Mike Doherty." Yeah.
And everybody kind of cheered.
"And on guitar, Rick Sarko." And everyone cheered. "And I'm on keyboards, John Robson."
And there was a much less vociferous cheer, just a smattering of slightly confused applause. And I thought, I haven't done anything wrong. And yet there's 300 people in this room who have all seemed to have formed this collective negative judgment of me that I don't deserve as much applause as the other band members. And then I understood that, concerned that I didn't know any of the songs, they'd put me so far to the side of the stage and turned my keyboard so quiet that 90% of the audience didn't even know there was a keyboard player on stage. So I thought, well, why do they even ask me to join?
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about the man under the head of Frank Sidebottom, Chris.
Chris Seavey. He was a punk singer who never really had any hits. He had one, actually two minor punk hits. And then one day he just had this strange U-turn into Frank Sidebottom. He created this character and an entire world for this character. He'd be up all night building Frank things in his shed. So little models. There was Little Frank, his puppet, and then Little Denise, who was Little Frank's girlfriend. If you're the sort of person who admires the idea of like putting in an awful lot of work, but at the same time really aiming low and really being marginal, then Frank's the person for you. Because he dedicated his life to this, but never had a big audience.
How different was Chris Seavey when he was himself versus when he was Frank?
Chris was quite chaotic and hedonistic and prone to drink and drugs. And Frank was like an innocent child. It makes me suspect that all this happened for a reason, that when you're inside a fake head and also when you're inside the character of an innocent child, it's just a more comfortable and safer place to be than without a fake head in a chaotic, hedonistic whirlwind of a life.
Yeah, he's just able to immerse himself in this alternate universe that he has control over.
Yeah, yeah, and no stress, no tax to pay, no disappointed wife that you've been out all night and you haven't told her where. You know, mm-hmm. Frank was a safe place to be.
Yeah. When did you leave Frank's band?
I was fired in 1990 for tax reasons. He owed £30,000 tax. Chris did, not Frank. Yeah, in Frank's world, there was no such thing as tax.
No, no such thing as income tax.
I remember that he stood up in court, Chris, and the judge said, "This is a very serious matter. Have you considered a payment plan?" And Chris said, "Would £1 a week suffice, my lud?" The judge said, "No, it would not." So he fired us all and went solo. And that was it for 15 years. I moved back down to London and didn't hear a word for 15 years. And then I was in the park with my little boy and my phone rang and I said, "Hello." And this voice went, "Hello." And I said, "Frank." And he said, "Oh, yes." And I said, "How are you?" He said, "Oh, I'm very well." And I said, "Frank, will you put Chris on?" And he went, "Hang on." And he said, "Hello, John." He'd retired, Frank, a number of years earlier and became an animator on Pingu. But he really missed Frank and wanted to bring him back from retirement. So I held my breath because I knew from watching the Blues Brothers what was going to happen next. It didn't happen. Instead, he said, "Will you write something about your time in the band to help me with my comeback?" So I got home and it all just sort of flooded out of me. This piece for The Guardian. And then at the time, one of my books, The Many Stoic Goats, was being turned into a film. So I was spending a lot of time with the screenwriter, Peter Strawn. And when he read my piece, he said to me something kind of weird. He said, "All my life I've wanted to write a film about what would it have been like if Captain Beefheart had been around in the 1940s, like a man out of time." He said, "But your idea is better." And he meant the idea of a man with a big fake head.
And turning that into a film. So how did you go about doing that? You co-wrote it with Peter.
Yeah.
It's fictionalized. It's not a documentary per se. You had to make some creative changes to the story, right?
Yeah, I think we started by making two big changes. One was that I didn't really want to write about a comedy band. I wanted to change the music. I should say all this was very much with Chris's blessing. He didn't really want there to be a character based on Chris in the film. Mm-hmm. So that really gave us permission to say, well, okay, what would be the perfect way of telling this story? Chris never took himself that seriously, even though he was up all night for months building these meticulous Frank things. If everything went wrong and it was chaos, he would purport to love it when things went wrong. And we thought, wouldn't it be better if our Frank and his band took themselves much more seriously, almost like craft work, like a sort of kraut rock avant-garde band.
Yeah.
So that would like raise the stakes a lot. And so we made that change. And then we started to say, well, what if our Frank never takes his head off? Why would that be? And also how? How can you live underneath a fake head your entire life? And then we started thinking about other great outsider artists, particularly Daniel Johnson, who I'm an enormous fan of.
Yeah.
And so we started thinking of our Frank as like a mashup of Daniel Johnson and Frank Sidebottom and Captain Beefheart.
Have you ever tried on the Frank head, John?
Yeah, and also I've tried on the movie Frank head. There was a New York premiere and Michael Fassbender was there and let me try on the fake head. So I've tried on both the real head and the fake head. And I've got to tell you, it feels great in there. I was at a Halloween party last year, which was full of quite famous people, and I wore a mask and I realised that if I kept the mask on all night, it would eliminate all social anxiety. And I rather wish it was socially acceptable to wear fake heads quite a lot. It would make my life a lot easier. Unfortunately, violent criminals have spoilt.
Yes, they've kind of taken that away from us. But maybe if enough of us band together and with the success of the film and your book, maybe if we all start wearing Frank heads, maybe we could make it socially acceptable.
Would it help if I said my facial expressions out loud? Welcoming smile.
Delighted look.
But what goes on inside the head inside that head?
Frank. People should know about you. You should be famous.
Flattered grin, followed by a bashful half smile.
Stop saying your facial expressions out loud. It's extremely annoying.
Here it is, my most likable song ever. Coca-Cola, lipstick ring, go dance all night, kiss me, just kiss me, Nefertiti.
This is your most likable song ever?
Yeah.
People will love it.
That's a clip from Frank, a film inspired by writer John Ronson's experience as a member of Frank Sidebottom's band during the late 1980s. Ronson's the author of Frank, the true story that inspired the movie. He talked with Doug Gordon.